Bernard Eastland's 1987 patent, in which he makes it very clear that they would require chemical particulates in the atmosphere in order to have ionospheric heaters like HARP work and turn our atmosphere basically into a battery, an antenna, an electrified atmosphere for wireless operations that were military in nature. What they really wanted was something much more planetary and vast. It was actually a surveillance instrument that could see everything, that was eyes and ears for all military operations, what they call full spectrum dominance. And that is, we're living in an era in which our Vatican, our Roman Church, like in the Middle Ages, our Inquisition, is this space program I'm writing about. This is it. And it connects to the vaccines, it connects to the GMOs, it connects, I mean, Sarah, we could go on and on and on as to the connections of how we are being plugged in to the very environment that will assist in transforming us in a transhumanist singularity way.
Welcome to Business Game Changers. I'm Sarah Westall. I have had a lot of listeners ask me to bring on Alana Freeland. And so I've reached out to her and she's coming on my show. And this was just a fascinating interview. I mean, I usually never do this, but I'm listening to her and I forget what question I'm going to have to rethink about it. And we laughed a couple times because I was just so intrigued by some of the things that she was saying. And I think it's because she just really is able to get her brain way out there on the edge of what's going on and really think about stuff. And she's not afraid to go out there. And that's the whole point of my show, is to get people critically thinking and not afraid to think about different things and out there. You don't have to agree with anybody, but not being afraid to think about things and to critically think about things and to look at things from all different types of perspectives. And she will get you doing that. And it's so fascinating to be able to listen to somebody who's mentally so free. That's what I love, is the mental freedom to think about things in different ways. And, you know, Catherine Austin Fitz really highly recommended her book. And whenever she really highly recommends a book, it's usually pretty good. So very interesting woman. I'm so glad she came on. But before we get into that, I want to remind you about some free stuff. There's the Candida Summit that's coming up in July, and there is the Cannabis Summit that's coming up. There's also a free 7-day sugar challenge that I highly recommend. It's with the Grow Network. It's free. And then there's two free memberships. One's with the Grow Network, a monthly membership. You get a free month. One free month, and then you get to check it out and see if you really like what they're about. And then the cannabis site has a lifetime free membership. So I really highly recommend looking at that as well. I'll have all the links below for those who are interested in that stuff. And then I also want to tell you that Ilana sticks around for my Patreons, and she talks about directed energy weapons and what's going on with that. And there's a whole industry that's growing around that particular world, and she's going to talk about that for my patrons. Very interesting. I have done a show with three prominent people in the alternative media that have been targeted, and they talk about their experiences with that. And then I did a 10-minute mini documentary to go along with that to show what the facts are with that, because a lot of people don't believe people who have been hit with an energy weapon. And so my little mini documentary just shows that these really are real. And I reference government sources and different things of real situations that have happened over the last few decades. But a lot of digs into it deeper and talks about, as she always does, because she spends so much time doing research. She says that she's not a scientist when it first starts, but and to be fair, she has a bachelor's in biology, and then she also has a master's degree, but she'll talk about what her background is as well. Very fascinating woman. So we're going to get into that interview now with Alana Freeland. Hi, Alana. Thank you so much for joining the program.
I'm honored to be on your show, Sarah. I have admired you for a long time.
Well, thank you so much. I've gotten so many listeners that want you to come onto the show. Catherine Austin Fitz has really given you glowing reviews. In fact, your latest book she put on the must read list, which is coming from her, is a pretty, you know, big honor. So I wanted to have you on to talk about some of the things that you talk about in your book. Before we even get into it, can you tell people about your books? The two that you have, the most recent one, and then you also had Under an Ionized Sky. We'll just get that off the plate, give you a little pitch a little bit, and then get right into the interview.
Okay. Years ago, 2012, I went to a conference in Los Angeles called Consciousness Beyond Chemtrails. And at that point, I was only friends with independent scientist Clifford Carnicum, and had done some, just bent over him and watched his research with Morgellons in Santa Fe, New Mexico, northern New Mexico. I knew next to nothing. I had files on chemtrails, and I had file on HARP, the High Frequency Active Auroral Research Project up in Gakona, Alaska. I went to hang out with Clifford and hear him speak, and I, in the process, met the luminaries at that time in the so-called chemtrails movement. From there, I continued doing work on my own. I was asked by Adam Parfrey of Feral House Press to write a book on chemtrails. I would probably never have done it had Adam not asked me, because at that point I didn't feel I knew enough. But I had Clifford's guidance as I began to read the patents that had to do with HARP up in Alaska. I read Nick Begich's and Gene Manning's book, Angels Don't Play This HARP. I studied all the books that so far had been written on the topic, which was about four or five. And then I began digging in. And the two things I dug into in the first book, called Chemtrails, HARP, and the Full Spectrum Dominance of Planet Earth, were Bernard Eastland's 1987 patent, in which he makes it very clear that they would require chemical particulates in the atmosphere in order to have ionospheric heaters like HARP work for what they wanted. And they wanted the juice from the ionosphere far above us. They wanted to bring some of those ions down to our atmosphere and turn our atmosphere basically into a battery, an antenna, an electrified atmosphere for wireless operations that were military in nature. So that was one thing I did. And then in Chapter 8, I went deeply into Clifford's over 100 at that time papers about Morgellons. I had a biology background in undergrad, and so I was pretty comfortable going into looking at how bacteria can be engineered to create new pathogens. And I already knew that the American government and military had been behind that. For decades, they had been creating all kinds of pathogens by using virus and bacteria. So those two chapters were the real highlights. But otherwise, in that book, I tried to just name what was going on in that chemtrails movement to the best of my ability, and cited a lot of, you know, over 600 footnotes. Then after that, that book really catapulted me into a new level of understanding. And for your listeners, they need to know that when you're pursuing the very vague, opaque national security projects, you have to really look at a lot of stuff, and that's probably my forte, is I'm willing to read a lot and make a lot of copious notes and then kind of sit on everything like a hen in a way, to kind of percolate it into something where I can see what the bigger picture is. And that's really what I try to do. I am not a scientist. I am a citizen journalist, extremely concerned about a technology that is dire, is anti-life, and is being given precedence over life and over human beings. by powers beyond our military that apparently are able to consolidate and move mountains and control mainstream media and everything that happened under the Manhattan Project in World War II times 1,000. So in the next book, Under an Ionized Sky, I went back through what I had done in Chemtrails Harp and brought it up to date. And then I began to look at the space fence. And the space fence was something that we had back in the Reagan-Cheney-Bush era, 1980s, under the SDI, the Strategic Defense Initiative. And we called it the Star Wars program because they, lo and behold, brought out a pre-programming movie called Star Wars in 1977 to support that term for the SDI and make it friendly to the population. But what they didn't have when they brought that forward, they had was a sort of necklace of radar installations across the south Midwest of the United States that was constituted the space fence at that time. And its eyes were diverted to the sky as an anti-ballistic missile program. But what they wanted out of SDI was much more than that. Yes, they wanted to count the space debris that might damage our satellites. Yes, they wanted to keep eyes open for any enemy incoming missiles. But what they really wanted was something much more planetary and vast. It was actually a surveillance instrument that could see everything, that was eyes and ears for all military operations, what they call full spectrum dominance. And that is a doctrine of the American military. And when they say full spectrum, yes, they're talking about a couple of things in my mind. They're talking about the electromagnetic spectrum for sure. So that's all the way from gamma rays to radio waves, basically. And our visible realm is very tiny compared to all the different electromagnetic sequences that we now are having to deal with, because this Pandora's box has been completely opened in the name of full spectrum dominance. So when I was looking at the space fence, I was so fortunate to have been on Coast to Coast and attracted the attention of a guy who had been the team leader of in working on the HAARP installation, which are phased array antennas up in Alaska, and had worked on 240 other installations around the world for a three-letter agency I will not name, for the contractors that worked for that three-letter agency. His name is Billy Hayes, and he is called the HAARP Man. And Billy was right at my elbow the whole way through the Space Fence book, Under an Ionized Sky, explaining to me how they were making an entire infrastructure, planetary infrastructure on the ground, and near-Earth orbit, of a way to sandwich us between the ground and the atmosphere, upper atmosphere, so that we could, communications could happen, what they call C4, command, control, communications, and cyber warfare, but also so that human beings and all of life on Earth would be subject to a huge AI system, artificial intelligence system, that would eventually be sort of seen by military as the space fence. And so that's what I did in the book, is tried to lay out how all the pieces of this space fence operation on Earth and near Earth orbit are actually sandwiching us between, so that if you look around, and on the cover of my book, people will see that I've made the Earth look like Saturn with a ring around it. Well, that ring is actually being formed by the rocket launches and that are spewing nanoparticles of conductive metals all the way up, just as the jets are doing so, and we're breathing that in. We're also breathing in what the rockets are doing. But a lot of that gets caught up in the centrifugal force up in the stratosphere of the sounding rockets. And then it sort of settles around the planet into a ring. And I once asked Billy, I said, so this ring of metals, it's got to have something to do with communications, right? Because they're conductive. And he said, if I were to give it a word, I would have to say it's kind of like a CD-ROM. And yes, it will be used for communications. It has to do with control of this planet, but it also has to do with communicating with whatever we're sending out to other planets in our solar system. So that's kind of my vision. And I tried to show people how we've entered a space age, but very quietly, and not at all the space age that John Kennedy wanted. This is a militarized space age in which everything that can be militarized is being militarized as I speak.
That makes a lot. What a great overview. I'm so glad you started, because I think it really sets the stage for what questions I'm going to ask you. But I would agree that everything I'm seeing is being militarized, and it's that focus. So that's what you're seeing. And are we almost going to seem like a Saturn ring? Is it going to end up being like that? And can you see it now in the sky? If you were looking from the moon, or you're looking from Mars, would it start looking like we have a ring around the Earth?
Yes. In fact, NASA came out with a little video clip a few months ago that I show during my PowerPoint presentations. They call it, the way they said it is, well, we've discovered that there's this ULF balloon around the Earth. That would be ultra low frequency. So they made it sound like they just sort of discovered it. Lo and behold, it's protective, they say. And it's the only time I know of, Sarah, that this ring that's being formed around the Earth actually was made public as this ULF balloon that's benign. But it's anything but. And I was thrilled that they did that, because now I can show it to people that actually there is something forming around the Earth. And then it makes you think about Saturn, doesn't it? In chapter 8 of this, Under an Ionized Sky, I go into CERN, and I get pretty out there. There's only two chapters in which I get pretty out there, chapter 2 and chapter 8, where I have to contemplate the possibility that Saturn at one time was, if it's a dead planet, it had this ring around it, and this ring may have been communication for it as well. And there may be people at NASA, given that Operation Paperclip, when we brought over thousands of Nazi scientists and engineers and ensconced them in our military places like NASA and universities and hospitals, et cetera, that possibly the Nazis, they were into all sorts of esoterica. Possibly that history of Saturn is something that is guiding some of what is going on now with the nanoparticles of heavy metals that we're now breathing. It's not that they're trying to kill us with these heavy particles. I don't believe that. I think we're just collateral damage. We're also information as to how to, we're heading toward transhumanism, and the transhumanism, I believe, is also subject to a space age in which we want a different kind of human being able to go beyond the Van Allen belts. So far, we do not have a human being that can go beyond the Van Allen belts, that can have enhanced capabilities in space. So I see us as guinea pigs down here on the Earth, and the more I'm writing now, of course, I've started the third book, which is on synthetic biology that follows from everything that is in the previous two books. All of this ends up in our bodies and brains. And we are going to have to deal with that if we want a healthy, vibrant life while we're here on the earth, and our children and grandchildren to inherit something worth having, then we're going to have to learn how to live with this. I'm not one of the people that thinks that if we can just consolidate and maybe get some legislators to pay attention and maybe get this and that. I believe that we're on our own and that we need to learn how to counter what is being used by the military and the military industrial intelligence complex for the space age that they are now throwing everything in. And I think Catherine Austin Fitz has talked extensively about the secret space program, and it is a reality. There's no question in my mind.
With all of your studies, what do you think about the people that are actually in the military? I mean, isn't that going to hurt them as well? Or are they doing something to keep themselves safe? Because they're people too.
Well, I'm not sure about the military. If you're talking about the grunts, you know, infantry, et cetera, who join, I've never seen that the American military and Veterans Administration takes good care of its soldiers at all. But if you're talking about officers and those who have some rank.
Yeah, people in the know who are making it happen are going to be like, yeah. Wait a minute, this is going to hurt me too.
Yeah, and my family, absolutely. So I assume it's similar to what happened with AIDS. When AIDS was created, they had the antidote for those who were in the in club. And I would assume the same is going on now. I noticed three years ago how millionaires and billionaires are building underground. Okay, that was interesting. I'm sure they're going to have state-of-the-art filter systems for water and air. I'm sure that they may even have a vaccine that they can take, which will keep them safe from the nanoparticles that are in their body. Maybe they'll be able to expel them. Maybe they have the ultimate Rife, Royal Rife machines that can drive them out. But I know they have that, and it might even be the very lure to get them into the in club so that they serve the purposes of those who are running the space program into the future. And I also know there are others that really don't care about their progeny. They certainly, I've learned through a few clients that, you know, I ghostwrite books, learned through a few clients of mine who were raised very well, well-to-do, that really a lot of those people don't really care about their progeny and make things very hard for them. So this is a great dream. This is an old dream. It goes into secret societies like the ones that President Kennedy was speaking against in the days before his assassination. The dream is worth it to many of these, and they will go on. And that also makes me think that we're in a transition phase, that they will eventually find a way to do this, keep the atmosphere ionized for all the operations they need, without all the heavy metal contamination. I think this is transition. I know they're experimenting a lot with plasma in the atmosphere, and that's the fourth state of matter. I would almost call it, as I do in the book, the first state of matter. But there are many plasma experiments going on, and plasma can be used as a fuel. It can be used to create entities of sorts. I think they're just tickle pink to have discovered Pandora's box, pried it open. And now it's just that there's going to be a lot of fallout because this is a living planet and whole forests are dying now from the aluminum nanoparticles that are destroying the soil under them and destroying their bark and their whole life system. The distraction was, oh, it's all about carbons, and it's because of your cars that this is happening. And so now we're going to make you pay and decrease your carbon footprint. But really, it was completely a Naomi Klein disaster capitalism ruse to raise money to throw it back into the space program and distract us from the military purposes going on that are indeed heating our atmosphere, are indeed producing anti-life environment that the Earth may, you know, that the Earth is going to survive, but I don't know that human beings and various species are going to survive unless we bring this to our consciousness, understand what's going on, and start looking for remedies, folk remedies, low-tech remedies, because we cannot afford the big machines. They know that. And so we're in a war here. We're in a war. And I'm driven to do this. Basically, my whole life is dedicated to this now for about 8 years as I try to get it out to people so they can make the decisions they need to make.
Well, you talked about the global warming and the distraction. And that's why so many scientists came forward and said, wait a minute, your arguments don't make sense. This is all BS. And it is. Their arguments are BS. But maybe there's global warming and climate change, but it's not because of what you're saying. And so that's an indication that what you're saying is true. Now, when we talk about an ionized sky, that makes a lot of sense to me. I've been thinking about what you're saying for a while, that they're doing something else with all this stuff. Now, what is it that creates the ionization? What are they putting in the sky and how are they doing it?
To me, there's a few stages to it. Definitely the HARP experiment, as they call it, which ran from approximately the late 90s to 2013, when they did for a while shut the ionospheric heater known as HARP. It's a big phased array antenna up in Alaska with acres and acres. The great thing about HARP, it was not the first ionospheric heater. We had one in Puerto Rico at Arecibo. We had one at Brookhaven National Lab out on Long Island. In Europe, there was, you know, the ISCAT in Norway, and then in Sura in Russia, and on. We had quite a few, but none of them had the power and the steering mechanism that HARP had. That was Eastland's brilliance. And so what they did is they would pinpoint a certain area of the ionosphere way up, zap it with microwaves, heat it up so that even the ionosphere was bubbling out into the cosmos. That's how much they heated it. And that activated all the electrons up there and ionized more. And then they began to swirl down the magnetic lines of force, which there are millions of them, going between the ionosphere and the Earth. And so down into our atmosphere it all came. And now what they needed in our atmosphere was a conductivity. It was one thing to bring that energy down, but now they needed to keep it going. So that was when the jet planes and in the fuel and possibly supplementary systems revved up. And that would be the late 90s, early 2000s. Clifford Carnicom was watching the beautiful blue azure skies of northern New Mexico blighted by these long, looking like contrails, condensation trails, but lasting far longer than any condensation trail ever would last, and then filtering out into a cirrus cloud cover. And he was collecting what was falling down from that in his HEPA filter. He was collecting condensation, analyzing, etc. So between what bringing the ions down and then getting a conductivity of tiny, tiny particles that would be distributed in the stratosphere, but would eventually filter down into our atmosphere in order to, create condensation. One of the first things they had to do, Sarah, was control the weather, because weather is not just control over the earth and political control over nations. You bring a drought, you bring flooding. Right now, Europe is undergoing amazing flooding. And so it's a weapon for political purposes, but also it is a means to keep the ionization activated in the atmosphere. You know, lightning, storms, the what they would be using in order to move the weapon systems like NEXRADs, radar installations, lasers. All of this is electrifying, is quickening. So they were trying to get it so that it would be, you'd be using the energy and you'd be building the energy and using the energy and building it. Meanwhile, the ionosphere heaters are still zapping the ionosphere, bringing more down when they need it for various purposes. And we did see, and I maintain this is true, when I read Judy Wood's book, Where Did the Towers Go? Dr. Judy Wood, this is what happened. You can see it as a weapon, as a directed energy weapon, the use of the ionospheric heaters like HARP. 9/11 was that. There's no question in my mind. Was it HARP? I don't know that. But I know it was a directed energy weapon, and I know how it works. And I've had to delve into scalar physics, which is incredibly fascinating, and delve into quantum physics, which, you know, we've moved from Einstein and Newton into quantum, and most people don't know that yet. Certainly, a lot of university programs are not teaching that. So this is a very contained, controlled science, which is why the public is not being informed.